Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to the Cricket Collective. I'm Jared Kimber, and with me today is Ashes legend Steve Harmison. We're going to be talking about the Indian Premier League because it was going to start tomorrow. Actually, it was going to start 2 weeks ago. And with the Indian government now extending their lockdown, no one has a real idea when the IPL might happen at all. But we want to focus on what the IPL is like. So that means we're going to talk to New Zealand leggy Ish Sodhi and former county quick Steph Jones, who's now a coach with the Rajasthan Royals. The IPL is cricket's greatest cash cow, so that means it's on the front line of how and when cricket will play again.
Call bowling his fourth ball of the evening. Tarayudu bowls him! Oh, that's a sensational piece of bowling from Sinan Kohl.
What a delivery!
Here he goes again. See you later.
Now Rashid bowls to him. Bowls him through the gate. Absolutely brilliant. There is the wrong end.
That's by Rahul. It's caught. Oh, this batsman has just swung in a moment.
Billings. He goes over his head. Should be 6-4. It's 6-4.
Six to win. Kumar's in, and he's bowled in.
Cops the full toss, says I'll have a bit of that, and smashes it out of the Chinnaswamy Stadium.
Yeah, nothing again. Billings, pick that out the back row.
Not what's again. Again?
Has it got the distance?
That's
yes.
It. What's going to be again?
That's a long one. That's the bomb. 4-4-6 from Gautam Gambhir.
Captain's in the mood.
You know, Kumar bowls to Jadeja. He leaves no doubt whatsoever. Hitting it out on the ground into the top deck of Oman. Duplessis goes straight over his head. And six. He wins the game with an emphatic strike of the ball.
Well, Harmy, that is the excitement that you get from the IPL. It's funny when you do talks in cricket and you travel around and people ask you what it's like. Having been there, I compare it to a mega church. You know, everyone up and clapping, incredible atmosphere within the ground. Quite often, I'm not sure if the spectators, and it's a bit like this at the MCG, to be fair, for a random game, but I'm not sure if the spectators at the IPL are always following the score as closely as everyone else, but they are getting up and down. And we now have a situation where if the IPL comes back this year, it's going to be in empty stadiums, which seems almost the opposite of why the IPL was invented in the first place. What do you think about that, Harmy?
Yeah, absolutely, Jared. I think it's the IPL is, it just seems as though it's a completely different tournament to what we are known as. I've not been to the Big Bash. I've commentated on TV and radio for the domestic T20 here, and it's about the cricket, where it just seems that the IPL is about, it's an event. I think the Big Bash is a little bit similar, maybe it's a little bit in between. And it just seems this whole, the whole stage before, the whole performance is not just about the, well, you see an hour and a half, it takes them nearly 2 hours now to get to get 20 overs in. But it just seems that it's just this, it's this brilliant event. I was fortunate to be in India, in Mumbai, last year when the final was on. Thankfully, it was an hour and a half away and I didn't attempt to go because I would never have gotten there and getting back because of, I remember Michael Atherton talking about being there and saying it took him nearly 4 hours to get out of the stadium when the game was finished. It's just this whole great big event that I think cricket needs. Would it be, is it something that we need that much where we can have it without fans? I actually think yes. I think we do need it. Is it something you fit in this world calendar that it's important because it's domestic cricket, it's not international cricket? Absolutely. I think this is so important to get the calendar right. And I think, you know, potentially we can get it in. I think we could get it in September, with it being leading into what hopefully will be a very, very good World T20 down in Australia.
Well, the difference is, and you see this, I don't know how much you follow some of the American sports, but baseball is looking at playing all their tournament in Arizona and having all the players in hotels in Arizona. And it's quite a full-on system. I'm not sure it will work. We talked about in rugby league in Australia playing it all on an island. Domestic leagues can do things that international sport can't do, and that's one of the reasons why it was hilarious that the Olympics kept trying to suggest that they might be able to play and no one else could. That's one thing that the IPL has an advantage. If it has to go ahead, and realistically from a financial point of view, it might be more likely that it will go ahead than international cricket. If it does have to go ahead, they can actually stop the overseas coaches, stop the overseas players, and have an Indian-only league. That there is a possibility, perhaps, if India is not completely beset at that stage, that we could get something.
Yeah, and I think it's it would be important for India the way the money in the world is at this moment. You know, talking about and seeing the Chancellor on TV there talking about what it's like in England. When you mentioned there about getting asked about what, you know, it's like in India and the competitions, I get asked all the time when you say, you know, where's the best place you've been to and where's the best tour? What's it about India? India is a place, you know, it's set by itself when you talk about the enjoyment factor and what it is to the people in that country. That country, cricket is huge. We think we are obsessed by football in the British Isles. We are not compared to what it is in what the Indian public see of India. So it's important that from a feel-good factor in the country, once it's safe to play, then I think they would imagine the Indian government will want the BCCSI to get the tournament on as soon as it possibly can. If it fits in with the world cricket, if it fits in with the ICC, I would imagine the BCCI will say, we're not bothered. We need this for our country. And I think that's what will probably happen. I can see the T20 Blast going without overseas players in this country. I can see all countries trying to get cricket played in their own environments, first and foremost. And if you can get assistant coaches, and overseas players in, more the better. But I think once we are out of this pandemic and it's right for everybody to play, then I think sport will take a lead in trying to get a feel-good factor and economically trying to get everything pushed back as best we possibly can to where we once were. And you talk about basketball and baseball and in America, there is talk about the Premier League playing at St. George's Park or playing at Wembley. So even the biggest sport in this country is talking about playing behind closed doors over a 6-8 week period and everybody locked down and it just shown on TV. So if that can be done, there's no doubt the Indian Premier League and the BCCI with the Indian government will be looking at ways to get the feel-good factor back in India, in the country of India.
Yeah, and it's worth talking about, A, just how much money the IPL has. And it is the billion-dollar ticket within cricket. Mm. So it's on a different level than, you know, New Zealand and Sri Lanka are probably not going to be able to, you know, get a small island or get an area that's not affected and bring all the players in and the players' wives and, you know, all the hospitality people that would need to be there. So the BCCI is already in a different position. But there are so many factors to playing behind closed doors. One, to be fair, I think cricket's already nailed. Anyone who's ever played in the UAE before knows what it's like to play in front of, you know, in empty stadiums. So cricket's ahead of the game there, I think, compared to other sports. But the other side is, you know, who touches the balls, people working in the back rooms. There's so many extra staff and everything. It's not as simple as, you know, we just won't allow fans in. There are so many people that go towards every, you know, individual cricket game, aren't there?
Well, there is. You just look at, I think my first ever ear tour in 97, 98, I think it was. There was a coach, assistant coach and a physio went. I think my last England tour, which was in 2008 or 2009, I think we players wise, I think we took 16 players and we just by one, I think we took 15 backroom staff. Now there's about 20 odd backroom staff. IPL, even more. It's even more, and it's not just committee men where you get your if you remember in this country where you get you go down to Worcester and you see Duncan Fernley with his gin and tonic standing on the balcony there, and there's two or three ECB delegates. The people that go along with teams in the IPL, the movie stars, the Bollywood movie stars, and because they're putting that much money in and because they want to be involved, they'll not want to miss out either. So you're right, there is so much more than just getting 22 guys, two umpires and 40-odd cameras around a stadium to make and showcase what the IPL is. Unfortunately, that what you just mentioned and what we've been talking about could delay the start of possibly the IPL. It wouldn't delay the start of the T20 Blast or anything like that, but it could, because like we mentioned before and you said right at the outset, it's about the show of the IPL, and that is what's made the IPL good, but more importantly in the world game, it's made it as lucrative as it is.
I remember very early on talking to one of the co-creators, not Lalit Modi, but his offsider at the IMG. So it's an IMG event, which tells you how big the IPL is. IMG don't get involved in small things very often. And he was he basically said, we're not competing with sport. We're competing with Bollywood. And now there's a crossover. There are, you know, Shah Rukh Khan and many Bollywood celebrities are there. It's a TV event. And it's a mega church when you're in there. A lot of that will go away if you can't sort of suddenly, you know, pan your camera to Sachin Tendulkar not doing anything particularly interesting in the outer.
Exactly right. But if you offer the guy in India, the family in India, who I mentioned before was there for the final last year, I looked out my hotel window and I looked and I was right on the beach and there was a big screen and there was thousands watching this big screen, the IPL final on the beach. It was like a carnival atmosphere. Now, if you offer somebody in India to watch behind closed doors or not to have it, I would imagine they'll happily, gladly say, we want it. We're not bothered about the Bollywood stars. We're not bothered about the razzmatazz of dancers. We're not bothered about the crowd. We want to see cricket because that's what we love. This is our religion. That is their religion. And I think if you, for 1 year, had to go without that Bollywood star, then I'm sure the population of India would love to have that because, one, it's safe to walk the streets again and it's safe to get about because cricket wouldn't start with if it wasn't safe because of the health and the government wouldn't allow it. And I think, too, it would get the feel-good factor back in countries of sport, because even if you don't like sport, it's something that gets people talking again and it gets the economy going.
Yeah, and I think most importantly, when it comes to all that, we're actually watching, you know, clips of cats playing cricket on Twitter at the moment. So it's quite clear that we don't need the Bollywood style just as much. And I'm happy to talk for the whole country of India there. Any sport at the moment, we would be very excited about. Well, you're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. Next up, we'll hear from the former Rajasthan Royals and current New Zealand spinner, Ish Sodhi.
Big wicket. Brathwaite is gone. Sodhi breaks through. Sodhi is destroying the thunder. Oh. And there it is. 6 for Sodhi. That man is Sodhi. Take a bow.
And another one. Ish Sodhi is on fire. That is wicket number 5. And what is he up to? And he's only conceded 8 runs.
Cut!
Smashes it away for 4. And 50 for Ish Sodhi. That is an unbelievable effort. One of the most dogged, gutsy 50s New Zealand cricket's ever seen.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with myself, Jared Kimber, and two-time Ashes winner, Steve Harmison. So as you heard there, Ish Sodhi has been spinning his way to success in T20 cricket throughout his career. 27-year-old, and he doesn't feel 27, he feels like he's been around for a lot longer than that, was due to be a bowling consultant with his former side, Rajasthan Royals, in this year's IPL. And he spoke with our cricket editor, John Norman, about the competition.
What has the IPL done for your game?
I think the IPL, it's such a great league to be a part of. Especially because we play so much international cricket in India now as well. You know, I think if I look back, I can probably think off the top of my head, maybe 3 or 4 times, maybe even 5 times I've visited India, whether that's New Zealand A series or for the Black Caps in the past, 3 or 4 years. It's a lot of times going to India. And I think if you do have the privilege to play in an IPL team, you're exposed to those grounds, those conditions and what it's like for a long period of time. So it's not so foreign when you do get a chance to go and play India in India. And then on the other perspective, I think it's taught me what franchise cricket is about. It's so different to international cricket. You're playing with guys that you play, spend 12 months of the year playing against. And so that's so unique, forming those relationships with guys that you're generally being competitive and trying to beat. And so that's a really unique thing about franchise cricket, and also I think dealing with pressure. You're playing probably the closest format to international cricket that I can think of that I've played, and it's tough. And you're playing in front of thousands and thousands of people. It's broadcast all over the world. It's high pressure. Some of the best players in the world, especially from a batting perspective. You're bowling to guys like Andre Russell and Pol Cutter, where he's dominated for such a long time. Death bowlers are getting to bowl against Dhoni when, they need 9 or 10 runs off the over. I mean, it's the best place to learn. And that's probably why Indian cricket's come such a long way as well, because the young fellas are being exposed to, a format that's really similar to international cricket from such a young age. It's crazy.
Does it change the way you think of yourself as a professional cricketer?
Oh, definitely not. I've always... wanted to play, growing up, I never wanted to play franchise cricket, or I never wanted to play T20 cricket. I just always wanted to play for New Zealand. And I suppose that's a challenge in itself, not taking international cricket too seriously, as opposed to, when you go and play franchise cricket, it's so fun and it's so new and it's so different that you probably relax a lot more and really enjoy it for what it is. I think the challenge is actually doing that with playing international cricket, especially for me. Because that's something that you dream of, ever since you're a kid. So, you want to still enjoy it for what it is. And it's just a game, just like this franchise stuff is as well. But if you're with a franchise for long enough, like I've, played 2 years with 4 Rajasthan Royals as a player. And this year, if the IPL was to go ahead, I was going to be involved as a spin consultant and as a coach. So when you're with a franchise for that long, I think it starts feeling like that kind of team environment that you have when you play obviously domestic cricket and then for your team internationally as well.
What things do you think that you've learned in the IPL that can help you as a cricketer for New Zealand, if any?
Yeah, look, I think one is definitely that dealing with pressure in tough situations. 2 is understanding what length to bowl when batsmen are trying to hit you for 6. And I think that has changed probably over time. I think the natural length for a spin bowler in 2020 cricket has probably come back slightly from what it used to be, because nowadays if you're a little bit full, it's very easy for the batsman to stand and hit. They call it a step hit in England. What I got used to when I played for Nottingham, we were trying to avoid the step hit, which is probably anything fuller than a 4.5 meter length. So you're trying to keep it between that, 5.5 to 4.5, with 5 meters being the ideal length. So understanding that that's the length that works in T20 cricket and trying to replicate it as much as you can, because you only kind of learn that when you play, 4 or 5 months of the year where you bowl 90% of your deliveries that the batsman's trying to hit for 6. So it's just so different to what probably it was, back in the 90s and 2000s and things like that. But that's just the evolution of the game. And as spin bowlers, I think if we want to survive in the game, we have to adapt and to move our games forward. We have to learn those small little things that are changing.
I remember we covered the IPL on TalkSport for 3 seasons. And I remember 1 year, Kane Williamson was playing for Sunrisers Hyderabad. I think he played 2 games. what is it like when you get picked for a side and then you don't play too much and you're having to, you know, travel around India essentially watching from the sidelines?
Yeah, it is pretty unique. You know, I think in my first year of the IPL, I would have played about 6 games, maybe 7, which was awesome. You're playing one in every 2 games. And then the next year, I only played 2 games as well. So, it does become quite tough. It depends what you use it for, you know, because it's straight after our season. So generally, you're reasonably tired and fatigued from that season. So whether you use it to, if you're on the bench to, you know, further yourself in other areas, whether it's fitness, you know, training in the gym or doing a fair bit of running, or, you know, you are in a place where there's unlimited facilities to be able to train on your skills. So you can upskill yourself while you're on the bench as much as you can. So when you do get the opportunity, you're ready. And if you don't, you know, if you're not fortunate enough to play so many games, whether it's only one or two, and sometimes guys go through the whole IPL without playing a game, they've put a lot of work in. So the next time they do play cricket, they're prepared.
Well, Ish Sodhi, who is an incredible bowler, I won't have to tell anyone from Nottingham that. He's taken, I think, 30-odd wickets over the last couple of years, an average of 26. He takes a wicket in the last 3 years in T20 cricket every 18 balls. He's also perhaps one of the biggest cricket nerds there is, as far as professional cricketers go out there. He can tell you who a player is if you say how many tests they have played or how many wickets or runs they've got. That's the sort of memory that Ish Sodhi has, which probably explains why it's such a young age he's a coach. But it was quite interesting there, Hami, talking about it. You know, county cricket was always seen as the finishing school. I think for a lot of cricketers around the world now, IPL and sometimes PSL as well are now seen as a place to go to become a finishing school rather than just being there because you're one of the best players in the world.
Yeah, I think the game's changed for the better. I think the white ball game is that's come into the game. You know, the financial side of it is can be ridiculous. It can be astronomical when it comes, if you get an IPL contract, then you play a lot of the games. But I would encourage any young player, if they can, even if they don't get picked up by a franchise, especially from an English point of view, if you can get over there and go and be around, if you can tap into an overseas player who's now as a coach, you can nip in and say, can I come and sort of be there for a week and see how they go? I think it would be so invaluable. I think what he says was perfect. It's a great place to learn. But also, you know, you play with the best players in the world. You could be sitting in a dressing room with the likes of Dale Steyn if you're a fast bowler, AB de Villiers if you're a batsman. If you can get close to Mahendra Singh Dhoni or Virat Kohli and spend some time with them, it's only going to make you a better cricketer when you come out the bat of it. So I think the game has changed from the finishing school as a first class cricketer in England. Now if you can get into the IPL or you mentioned the PSL or Big Bash, I think the people that you play with and the environment you play in is so invaluable. It can only be for the better to make you a better cricketer.
It's funny you mentioned AB de Villiers there because it just flashed up in front of my eyes for a second. He's made himself available for the World T20 for South Africa, if we have a World T20, of course. But the actual quality of cricket, so, you know, when you look at the analytics side of things, the actual quality of cricket in the IPL is so strong. It'd be interesting if they ever allow one or two more overseas players, because it would just be a phenomenal league then, I think, if you had the ability to have 5 or 6 overseas players. But even with 4, it's such a strong league.
Yeah, it more or less turns into an international league then, you know, proper international league. If you can have 5 or, you know, half the players or, you know, even more in a side from overseas. I think it's improved in the Indian cricket. I think probably at the start of my career, 2002, I played against India on my test debut. I'll look at the people that you played against. You could bowl short at a lot of these players, world greats as well, the likes of Dravid, Ganguly, Tendulkar, Sehwag. You bowl short at them and your filters are you in the game and you could intimidate them. Now, I think because of the IPL, because of the players that are coming into the league and the young Indian players are coming, they're not fierce for the short ball. They're not fazed at all by the short ball or the quick stuff. You know, they look as though it's ready to score. It's their chance to score. So I think that it has made the Indians better playing overseas and playing against the Seaman ball as well. So I think it's just been a fantastic competition for the game of cricket. And if we did get a chance to have an extra overseas or two overseas, fingers crossed you get more English players going to play in it, because it's my bugbear this. I would love to see more England players playing in it, because I think it'll make them better. And that's saying something when you think England are the best white ball team in the world at this moment at 50 over cricket, not in 2020, but I still think England have got a great chance going to Australia to be, you know, white ball world champions if they can go and do it down there in T20. So, you know, well, if you answer your question, can they get another, if they get another overseas player available, that can only be good for English cricket. Hopefully we can get some more Englishmen in there.
I think the biggest change, although I think you're right, the batsmen have certainly evolved. I think the biggest change that we've seen with Indian cricket has been the fielding.
Yeah.
And the IPL is a huge, momentous part of that. You see young guys running around now when they're preparing. Anyway, you're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with the Institute of Cricket. Next up, we're going to speak to a member of the coaching staff of an IPL team, and we'll tell you how he prepares his bowlers for franchise competition.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Second wicket in 3 balls.
Galtham again with his spin. Around the wicket to go.
Stuck on the left side. Brilliant bowling. Even better keeping.
Third wicket's about to go down. And Nitish Rana has got one completely wrong from Jofra Archer.
Well bowled, young man. Stuck at the plan.
Lachlan, 2 for 34. In and around about leg stump. Good Yorker on this occasion, Rissoni.
Straight in the air off the top edge. That should bring this downfall, and it will.
Stokes
finds the edge, and Tulare on the leading edge, and he's gone, caught a cover. Pace off the ball, does it again. Ben Stokes gets his name in the book.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with myself, Jared Kimber, and Steve Harmison. Those were just a few wickets taken by the Rajasthan Royals in the IPL over the years, and I'm delighted to welcome their bowling coach or bowling consultant, Stephen Jones, to the Cricket Collective now. How are you doing, mate?
Yeah, very good, man. All isolated and in lockdown.
Awesome. Now, how does a bowling consultant, someone who's been working with the team, try and get them up and active and get them ready for the season? If I remember correctly from chatting to you recently, your job was really just the first couple of weeks of the season, so it was mostly in the preparation. How does that person now work with all these fast bowlers who are stuck in their apartments and their houses?
Yeah, that's a tough one, actually. We were in a good place as well. We were in a camp in Nagpur, all the bowlers were over there except for the internationals, so I had the two young quicks. They were all in a good place, ready to go. So the plans have shifted. We obviously haven't got a start date yet, but I've designed all their preparation programs. So they send in videos daily, actually, the Indian guys. I made changes in terms of their training. Obviously, you can't make any technical changes now. And then as coaches, we meet up every Thursday morning on the Zoom app. So we're planning. I think it's the future, to be honest. This has given us an insight into the future, how it will all work. But it's as long as... I just feel sorry for the guys I do. You know, they haven't got a start date, so you can't plan, really. But they're ticking over. We've got a great head of sports science in John Gloucester who's monitoring their nutrition and stuff. So we do it slightly different. It's very much science-based, as you know.
Steph, you talk about you getting bowlers prepared. I'm intrigued to know how you get them prepared differently to what you would from like a first-class season, what we'd have in England. You were talking about, you know, this program is an English program, talking about the IPL. And you talk about trying to get them from a first-class point of view, be it endurance. Are you more of a sort of psychologist? You're talking about it in the mind and putting them in positions of, you know, when the crowd's going, the pressure's on, what is your go-to ball or you know, your go-to method?
It's, well, all these guys, you know, so the IPL is the cream of the crop. It's the best of the best. So your international players are normally coming off a one-day series or a T20 series or a World Cup, and then the Indian guys are just coming off a Ranji Trophy. So there's absolutely no need to rush some overs in, get some miles in the legs. They're training, they're prepared. So then it's all about game plans. You know, I went through all the batters of every team last year, so I knew what ball to bowl, when to bowl it, who was the best up front bowler for us, who bowled the more slower balls, and was it, you know, where was it best? Was it a short length or full length? Who bowled at the end? And as you know, it's like what happens then over the whitewash is totally up to the players and the captain's decisions. But all we can do as coaches, give them the data, give them the trends that have happened in the IPL over the so many years it's been going. And then we make an individual plan probably the week before, because it is a roller coaster. You know, I did 18 flights in 16 weeks. So it's an extraordinary event, and it's something I'm very proud to have done, and I will do this year again. But in terms of physical preparation, you know, it's just like top ups, really. Some bowling coaches have different theories and stuff. So the way I do my drill work is slightly different. And then when they do some target work, I bring in, it's called a V-flex, which is like a big circle, and they've got to bowl through it. So it gives them that tunnel to try and bowl a Yorker. Because, you know, when a coach tells you, can you nail the hole, get in that zone? Well, what is the zone? You need something visual. So then there's a big circle that's like a tunnel. So lots of grill work like that. And it's just a university, really. It's a great event.
And Steph, your speciality is making people bowl faster. That's what got you on the radar when it comes to Rajasthan. You know, why are your methods different to other bowling coaches' methods?
They're based on sports science. They're based on individuality. No bowler will ever be the same. You will never bowl the same delivery. There will always be something different. It's just about motor learning, skill acquisition. I test a lot. You know, if someone, you get coaches at the hours, and there's no dig at any other coach now, but if you get coaches at the back of the net who tell you, keep your seam up, stay tall at the crease, there's actually a reason why your front leg collapses. There's a reason why your back leg collapses. There's a reason why you laterally flex at the crease. So that's why you'll never get your wrist. You can tape your wrist up, but it'll never go straight because you've just collapsed on your front leg. So there's a reason for everything. And it's just too many bowlers and coaches just put in this cookie-cutter program that everyone has to follow. But there's a reason, you know, my daughters, now I give them a tennis ball and they bowl, there's a reason, a physiological and an anthropometrical reason why they bowl like that. And then it's our jobs as coaches then to go, is it safe? Is it repeatable? And is it effective? And then that is the base, that's the foundation of it. And from there then, we build the engine. You know, best coaches in the world should be coaching under 12s around there, 10, 11, 12. Because that's the main stage of brain plasticity, myelination. That's when technique is everything. That's when you have to be technique. By the time, you know, you're in the IPL or 18 years of age, man, technique, that pattern is set. It's hard work to change. So I go from an individual approach to it. I test absolutely everything. Does their muscles, are they able to utilize the energy stored in their muscles? Are they doing too much weights? So are they getting too strong? You know, it's not great. It's not good to be too strong in the gym. It's called the dynamic strength index. It means you're building strength that you can't use. So then it firstly takes away time from doing what you're supposed to, learn how to bowl and bowl. I think youngsters don't bowl enough. I could be all day talking about this, seriously.
I'm a grag. I totally agree with you, Steph. I don't think youngsters bowl enough and other things in place to get their bodies so you don't break, the kids don't break down. But I'm a big believer in feel. I'm a massive believer in feel and feeling that. And what you've just said there strikes to me. And the question would ask, is it when you get to the IPL, do you then say, right, I've got 8 bowlers. I'm going to have to be best mates with all 8 of them. They're all different. They've got different mechanics and different ways, but they've all got the same mind when it comes to how to bowl a Yorker, where it needs to come. Do you have to then become, you know, 8 best mates of people and try and make them feel good? Because you're right, when the 12-year-olds need coaching, when they're in the IPL, they just need guiding and pushing in a direction. Hopefully they get there. Does that something that comes true with you? Because personally, for me, who have not done any coaching awards other than the basics 1 and 2, but I've always believed, and I had quite a unique action, it's all about feel. And the more feel you've got and experience you have in the IPL pressure cooker, I think a coach is so invaluable if he's a calm, collective person. But the feel of what's happening, of what your study, what your individuals are, is so important.
It is. But you say you had a unique accent. It was actually, lots of your action was very good. I called them the attractor sites. So it was your brace front leg. You know, you've delivered from a strong position. You attacked the crease. So you, even though it looked different, even though all these bowlers look different, there's key points in the action that all the very best have. They're called the attractors, but that's a different answer. So my role as a coach, a bowling coach, in the IPL is to be the voice and to be their eyes. So I can be there, like their confidant. They can grab me and have a chat. I did that with a few of them. And then you just build them up, you know, because experience, you build them up on the feeling of it. Exactly. It's not about us as coaches. And, you know, the worst thing for me as a player was to have a coach who just talk nonsense just to tick a box and to feel important as a coach. As a coach, you just want to say something when there's actually something valuable to say. So I would sit down with them and talk through how they went from one thing. I would sort of, at the end of the game, I don't know, actually. I'm still working out whether to go. You pick your bowlers and you know the ones that you go to straight away and go, thoughts. All the Indian bowlers actually are like that. They like immediate feedback. But I was never going to go up to Ben Stokes and Jofra Archer after the game and talk to them. So it is getting to know them, because you were under Duncan Fletcher for a long time.
Duncan Fletcher never spoke to me for 8 years.
Apparently, he didn't speak for a whole year. He just observed or something.
He did, yeah, he did. But you mentioned there, and there's something that I keep on saying time and time again. Fast bowling is not an exact science. You know, it's not, we're not robots. And sometimes you bowl perfect bowls. You could say to him, I could say to Ben Stokes, you could bowl in that, Jared, you were probably in that final when Braithwaite hit him for them 3 sixes. He was millimetres off that perfect Yorker and it went out the ground. So you, Steph, you could have a bowler who bowls the perfect ball in your eyes because that's what he's trying to achieve.
Yeah.
But he still could get hit out the ground for 6.
Exactly. But that's the thing, isn't it? That's why we love this game, is that you do the best of your ability and what you think is the right decision at that time. You execute. As long as you execute your skill, funnily enough, there's another person the other end who's doing exactly the same. So he's executed his skill
exactly
as good as he can. And that is the game, is we can't sort of overanalyze the human factor within a game of 2020. But as long as you practice your skill, you execute what your coach, team effort decide at that time, you know what? That whatever happens, happens. And that's how... And I learned that this year, because the emotions in the IPL is just incredible. It is an incredible event that, needs to be seen, to believe. You know, I was 12 o'clock in the morning, you know, in Chinnaswamy Stadium. It rained. We played a 5-over game. There was 50,000 people still in there watching. 5-over game at 12 o'clock. It's like extraordinary event, and I don't think in this country we should be trying to copy it. In my opinion, I thought the last 2020s have been very good competition, so I don't know why we needed a change, but I'm sure that's a topic in itself.
That is certainly for another day. Thank you, Steph.
Cheers, Steph.
Thanks for coming on. You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. Myself, Jared Kimber, and two-time Ashes winner Steve Harmison. Coming up next, we'll drop down all the way from IPL down to the grassroots game, and we'll see how the coronavirus pandemic has affected club cricket in England. You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with myself, Jared Kimber, and two-time Ashes winner Steve Harmison. It's time to focus on the grassroots game with our bi-weekly feature, Breaking the Boundaries with the Institute of Cricket.
Breaking Boundaries on TalkSport 2 with the Institute of Cricket. For the best chance of making it in professional cricket, you need to train with us. Find out more at instituteofcricket.com.
Let's speak now with the Director of Complete Cricket, David Smith, about the current issues in grassroots game. Hi, David, are you there?
Hi, yes, I am, yeah. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. Thanks for coming on. I suppose I want to start with, how dire is the situation for clubs around England at the moment?
Yeah, look, it's obviously something that I think every club has, you know, had to give a lot of thought to, you know, the sustainability of their club over the next few months and, you know, potentially, you know, years, but you know, I've got no doubt that the strength of the club cricket that we're involved with, you know, we'll get through this really challenging time, and you know, we'll come out the other side. You know, the cricket community across the world is, you know, always comes together, doesn't it? On social media, you see so many videos of people looking to, you know, support one another, and you know, cricket clubs ultimately are the, you know, pillars of the community. Really, that, you know, that's where everyone goes and everyone wants to be part of it. So, you know, look, it's an incredibly challenging time for everybody at the moment, and you know, cricket, no more than others. But you know, I've got no doubt that it will come through this period.
And is this something the ECB can help, perhaps by spending money and by donating money to some of the clubs? Is that a way of helping some of the clubs, do you think?
I think the ECB are offering, you know, loans and grants, and I suppose the only slight issue with loans are that they have to be repaid eventually, and it depends on the club's financial circumstances if they're able to, you know, able to do that. You know, obviously grants that are available potentially that the government are announcing might be suitable for a lot of cricket clubs, but you know, cricket clubs really are at both ends of the spectrum. You know, there's cricket clubs that have thriving bars and, you know, hundreds of members, and there's cricket clubs that, you know, are quite small and operate, you know, from Saturday to Saturday. So, you know, there are sports clubs, and not only just cricket clubs, but that are affected, you know, at both ends of the scale, I'd say. But hopefully, the ECB will come to the rescue of any clubs that need it, because, you know, everybody wants the club cricket and obviously international cricket in this country to continue to thrive.
And David, you talk about the ECB help and what they can do. I've read a great article by Sheil Berry in whatever paper he writes for this week. Paul Collingwood talks about club cricket as a whole and in something that he was involved with. We've all been involved in trying to get into the professional game. And it, some things that strike with me was the north-south divide when he talked about the fast bowlers and the working class areas that are played. What sort of help are these club's going to get from the ECB, because when you look at it, you know, they do struggle because, you know, for instance, I'm in the northeast of England, and you know, you look at places like Durham and Cumbria, you mentioned they are literally that club, you know, that cricket club is the only sort of social event in the or social place in the in the community.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, in my experience of being involved in club cricket and the Institute of Cricket, you know, we work with a lot of cricket clubs. We have day-to-day contact with the head of these clubs. And in my experience of being involved in club cricket for such a long time, you know, the key to sustainability at cricket clubs is a thriving junior section.
Yeah.
You know, because that thriving junior section brings, you know, so many parents into the ground that might want to be involved in sponsorship or volunteering to help, you know, the club grow in other ways. And, you know, I just think that in everything that we've done, you know, the biggest piece of advice that I would give to clubs is to really look at your junior section at the moment and see, you know, how you can grow that, what support you can get to try and, you know, try and grow that. Because there's too many clubs, in my opinion, that sort of use their finances in the wrong way. You know, don't invest in the infrastructure, don't invest in facilities and their juniors. And then it's times like these when, you know, people are starting to scratch their heads and think, well, why is this the case?
No, I'd agree with that. And I think a part of that article, and Paul Collingwood talks about it because he was the guy that he spoke with. And it's interesting to say that, you know, you talk about the junior sections. But there has been instances, I have had it to happen to me, Paul had it 2 or 3 years ago, where he's brought up at Shotley Bridge all the way through the junior system, but because he was a professional cricketer, he wasn't allowed to play for his club side in a league game. And that, I mean, you talk about, you know, what frustrates clubs. It does it. It did it at Ashington, I think, 2 years ago. Mark Wood was injured, and we couldn't play. He didn't want to play for any other club because, you know, Ashington Cricket Club brought him up, and all of a sudden he's not allowed to play. He had to go over to Cumbria to get 10 overs in to come. So when you talk about trying to improve your junior side, some clubs will say, well, what's the point?
Yeah, I think it's trying to find a balance, isn't it? I mean, my club, Noland Irish Cricket Club, based in the West Midlands, we our local professional is Ian Bell, and he's played for Noland Irish for the last two seasons. He played his first game last year because he was coming back from injury, and you know, he was desperate to play. And look, I completely agree with you that there should be no reason at all why, you know, the likes of Mark Wood and Collingwood and yourself, you know, shouldn't be able to go and play for their local club. That's where you've grown up. That's where your loyalties are. And 100%, you should always be able to do that. I would, you know, I think sometimes, you know, the rules should be, you know, should be bent ultimately. So
your local clubs, I'll mention my sons play All Stars at Beckenham, where Stuart Binney played last year to keep the IPL theme going. How much of an impact has All-Stars had? You know, it's a few years in now. Are you starting to see people really coming through? Has there been a rise in junior players in the club levels?
Yeah, look, the cricket sort of circuit that we're involved with, and obviously being involved with a cricket coaching company like the Institute of Cricket, we saw such a massive boom after the summer that we had last year with winning the World Cup, the incredible Ashes series that we witnessed as well, and obviously Ben Stokes' innings at Headingley. There's no doubt about it that cricket saw a huge boom at that point. And obviously the ECB now launching a new program in Dynamo's cricket, you know, really trying to capitalise on that boom. But, you know, the numbers of children playing All-Stars, I mean, All-Stars is a fantastic, you know, fantastic opportunity for children to get involved in cricket. You know, I think it's really well-priced. It's good kit that they get sent in the post, and that's what you're looking to do, I believe, is just to build an absolute love of the game in kids at such a young age that, you know, the All-Stars is a great way of doing that. And obviously all clubs have their own sort of coaching programs in place as well.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. The All-Star stuff, when England won the World Cup, Mark Wood brought the trophy back to Ashington Cricket Club, and I think the club made something ridiculous. I think it was a five-figure sum on the day, just on that day, him coming, and it was a lot was to do with the All-Stars. What's going to come next from a the club cricket point of view? Now, David, what do we need from the ECB and from club cricket to take us to the next level once this pandemic's over?
I mean, I think that I think there's obviously at the moment, my sort of bugbear a little bit at times is that there's too many different leagues that operate under different rules and different formats. So I would like to see every single ECB, you know, Premier League in the country actually operate under one format. You know, and obviously I'm not, can't sort of, you know, decide what that format is. But, you know, I sort of certainly think that we should be playing a format of cricket that leads our younger players into playing into, you know, county cricket, whether that's in 50-over cricket or 55-over cricket, however, you know, the format is agreed. I genuinely believe that, you know, there should be quite a standard set of rules at every Premier League across the country in the way that, you know, the cricket is played.
David, thank you very much for coming on. That was David Smith, the Director of Complete Cricket. Well, that's all we've got time for today. You've been listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. We'll be back next week with a new host and a completely different topic. But if you've missed any of the show, you can download the podcast from the following on feed on Apple Podcasts, Acast or Spotify. Thank you very much.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com. A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.